I got the blues. I got the blues all night. Oh, yeah, yeah. Why, hello there. You didn't know I sang the blues, did you? You wouldn't know it, would you, you young punks? Anyway, we got a superstar blues musician on the show today. I can't believe it. I even wore my bow tie, even though you can't see it. I made cup of soup just for him. But hey, I hope he talks more than that Bob does, because Bob was a bum and this guy's a star. It's Rod Bland. Rod Bland on the Outdated Wrestling Hour.
Hey, old timer, get your feet off the stage. You bother me. Hey, everybody. My name is Bob Smith. You remember me from Pro Wrestling Illustrated, don't you? Why would you be here otherwise? You may be questioning why you're here after you hear what the show is about, but I'll tell you what. For me, this is a very special edition of the Outdated Wrestling Hour, and I'm so glad you're here. We have a music superstar in our midst. And I just have an hour-long interview with him, and we let it go, and we talked about not just music, but also wrestling, and it's a revelation because this gentleman knows as much about pro wrestling as anybody ever met. It's astounding. But this show means a lot to me. You know, when I got back into wrestling in 2021, it was a part of my life that I kind of put in a drawer, you know, my wrestling years. When I left PWI, I didn't want to leave PWI, and it was always kind of a sticking point in my brain and my soul, because it was like I got the rug pulled out from under me. I really didn't know where to go. A couple of wonderful people like Colin Bowman with WCW and Sandy Krebs and Bill Apter, they kept me going for a little while, but the more I did it, the more I didn't want to do it anymore. I thought PWI was going to be my career for pretty much the rest of my life. It didn't work out that way. But at the very moment I was leaving that magazine company, some astounding things happened to me, and I started a music career that was legit. Was I really, really famous? No. Did I get rich? Not hardly did I get rich. But I'll tell you something. It was worth every moment of it, because you know what? It was legitimate. It was good music, and I played with some amazing people. The first album I ever made was produced by the great session musician Larry Mitchell, an incredible guitar player. Eventually, I had albums produced by Duke Robillard, a true blues legend, and Michael Hill, one of New York City's greatest bluesmen that the town ever produced. I got played on the House of Blues Radio Hour with Dan Aykroyd not once but twice. Performed Chicago Blues Festival twice. I was out on the road on and off for 15 years in various bands that I put together. And it's a thing I kind of also had to give up, because around 2009, I had a personal situation that led me to say, let me just set this aside for a while. And the truth of the matter about my music career, people ask me, why'd you stop? And I went, well, I just never went back. My life changed. I worked back in publishing again at that point. And I was very, very busy, and I just decided to take a break. And unfortunately, that break has been the rest of my life. I just, you know, doing music is not easy. But in any event, again, I don't like the name drop, but this is all true stuff. I had a friend named B.B. King. You might have heard of him somewhere, you know. And it's another fluke of my life that I got to know the man. And one of his best friends, and maybe the greatest blues singer of all time, was Bobby Blue Bland. And when they got together, it was magic on stage. And I've always felt, even though I never met the guy, a kindred friendship, a kindred spirit out there named Rod Bland, who is Bobby Blue Bland's son, who is moving ahead in his blues career, not only doing tributes to his dad, but establishing himself as one of the great young musicians in today's contemporary blues world. There's no question about it. His albums have won awards. He plays constantly. He's just a fantastic musician. Rod Bland from Tennessee Way. And I'll tell you what, I'm just going to give the whole show over to him tonight. This is a little different. You'll learn a little bit about me. You'll learn a lot about wrestling and how wrestling and the blues kind of co-mingle a little bit. But, you know, every time I get a royalty check in the mail or I just bump into my music somewhere, I just realize how lucky I was. So I'm going to take a public shout out right now and thank some people along the way in my music career, like Jim Moran, Jerry Sorrentino, Mario Stiano, Michael John, Larry Mitchell, Bruce Rust, Dave Patrick, Dennis Cotton. On the list goes some people that really helped me along the way. I always said for a singer, you want to be the worst person in the band, and I always was, because I was surrounded by so much talent. You know, you need to have a great band, and I honestly felt for a long time I really did. I came from nowhere. I did it because I wanted to do it, and it was hard. You know, it was very hard, but every bit of it was worth it. I have no regrets at all. Made a lot of friends, too. So they're my two careers, okay? So this show is going to intermingle those two careers. Because we're going to talk a lot of wrestling here, folks. Even I was shocked at how much Rod Bland knows about professional wrestling. It's scary. He's got like the steel trap mind that remembers stuff that he saw 20 years ago. It's incredible. So this is a special edition. One of the great musicians in the blues world. I am so honored to have him on the show. I'm so flattered. I'd like to have him back soon because I had so much fun talking to him. But in any event, I hope you have fun and hear all the passion between the two of us once we start talking about wrestling and music. It's quite a story, and he's quite a musician. Enough of my yakking. Here is the one and only Rod Bland. As many of our fans here know, I was a blues musician on the road for 15 years and made 4 albums. And I'm very proud of the associations I had during that time period of my life, which was a blessing 100 times over. Because I got to know people like B.B. King and even perform with him on several occasions. But he's gone now. And I understand that Buddy Guy is retiring soon, at least from live performing. And we've lost so many of the giants like Bobby Blue Bland. Be of good cheer. Because contemporary blues lives on. And there's a whole new breed of new stars out there. And one of them happens to be the son of Bobby Blue Bland. His name is Rod Bland, and he's about as good as it gets. If you're lucky enough to go to Memphis, Tennessee, you will hear this man play at B.B. King's Club, or maybe Lafayette's, or maybe the Ghost River Brewery. He's a star. And I'll tell you what, it doesn't come any better than Rod Bland in contemporary blues. Rod, 1,000 thank yous for being on the show, man. It's such a pleasure.
Wow, Bob! Thank you. Way to sell it and put me over. I appreciate it.
That's wrestling talk.
I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm quite the thing. I'll go so far as to say, Mark. Yes.
Well, that's why you're here, because the lovely Helena has told me a million times about your love of pro wrestling. But we'll get to that in just a minute. How are things going? How's the project? By the way, if you folks haven't picked up Rod Bland and the Members Only Band's album from a couple of years ago, Live on Beale Street, which is a tribute to the great Bobby Blue Bland, do yourself a favor and look it up, because this is a modern-day classic, man. It's a beautiful album. Just 6 songs, but everyone's a killer.
Thank you. 6-song EP. All cut live at the B.B. King Blues Club. And a quick backstory, it was recorded May the 10th, 2019. And what's so significant about that is that's the day that my daughter, my supergirl, graduated college from UT Knoxville. And I drove up to Knoxville late Thursday. Yeah, I camped out, if you will, in Nashville with a friend. and got up around about 4 or 5 in the morning and drove the rest of the way. Made it there right before the ceremony began and got to see my little girl, who's not so little, graduate with honors. And, you know, my mom was there and, you know, of course her mom was there, and it's quite the family affair. And, you know, the only person, you know, really missing was my father. So at that time, that would have been the third Bobby Blue Bland tribute show that was scheduled to take place at the B.B. King Blues Club as a part of the Blues Music Awards BMA Festival on Beal. All the winners or whatnot that from the Blues Music Awards were playing in the club or there was something in conjunction with the Blues Foundation. So, you know, going back a little bit further, in 2017, excuse me, they put a statue of my dad at Main and MLK, Main Street and Dr. Martin Luther King, right there at the corner, pretty much adjacent from the Orpheum Theater. And that was the first year that we did a tribute show to him in 2017. Did it again in 2018. And, of course, now we fast forward to 2019. Thankfully, he's like a little brother to me, very close friend, Will Tucker, who is a pilot, flew to Knoxville in a small plane and picked me up from like a Knoxville airport, brought me back to Memphis. I got home for a quick load-in sound check, power nap, shower, get down to BB's, and we do the performance, which turned into this EP. And for those shows, we had guest vocalists that would come in, but the core always centered around Chris Stevenson, keyboard player, who I call cousin because he's like family to me, and Ashton Riker, who I play with normally on Thursday nights at the B.B. King Blues Club, and Jerome Chisholm, who's a good friend that leads the house band, the B.B. King All-Stars. So those three individual vocalists are the ones that pretty much made the EP, in my opinion, come together full circle. And, of course, great musicians, Harold Smith on guitar, Jackie Clark on bass, Mark Franklin, who played trumpet with my dad for years off and on, Kirk Smothers, and I believe Scott Thompson also played trumpet on that that night. Just, you know, not to be super long-winded, but all these gentlemen helped me honor my dad. And that EP that was released in 21 got us a Blues Music Award in 2022 for Best Emerging Artist Album. So,
right.
You know, it's my way of trying to help keep my father's name and legacy alive and thriving, because as we both know, the blues is looked at as a redhead stepchild, even though the blues is what yielded everything else. Rock and roll, soul, you name it. There it is. So, yeah, that. Again. Yeah. Sorry for being long-winded.
Oh, no. And I'm glad you mentioned the award, because I did know that and I neglected to mention. I should have said that about the EP. But, yeah, man, it's a great piece of work. And
thank you so much.
I think it established you on the scene. Both, well, everybody knows you in Memphis, but nationally, you know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, now more people are aware of what you're up to.
When I toured with my dad, you know, I wasn't really trying to be, you know, a named sideman. I just was, you know, happy to be back in my father, because it's something I wanted to do as a small boy, which is play drums for my dad. So yeah, in that regard, it's been something. It's been great. I didn't mean to talk over you or cut you off. It's just that when it comes to, like I said, trying to keep my dad's name going, I don't want to be known as simply Bobby Blue Bland's son, or simply B.B. King's godson, or the guy that carried Lucille down the street for the funeral procession of B.B. you know, I want to be the guy, I want to be known for what I am, you know, a musician who definitely loves the blues and embodies it, embraces it, knows that that's where I come from, but that's not where I'll remain.
But you know what?
Makes sense.
The blues world needs you. And they need people like our friend Tony Coleman, and they need people that are emerging now in the Memphis scene to keep it up. Don't forsake it, because you know what? Without the blues, where would we be? You know, it's like, exactly. this is important stuff, and it's the best music in the world in my mind. So it's like,
and we're not biased. We're not biased with that statement. We just, you know, we mean that with every fiber of our being.
Hey, I was in high school and a show came on PBS, the educational TV. And it was soundstage, and it was a tribute to Muddy Waters, and it changed my life. Right then,
I
was buying Deep Purple and Grand Funk records, and I watched this show, and it showed a bunch of great musicians like Buddy Guy and Junior Wells and Johnny Winter and Mike Bloomfield, and on it went, playing Muddy Waters songs back to him in a circle in the round. And I went, this is it.
Wow.
This is the stuff. And it changed my perception of everything in music from that point on. I'm telling you, it was my introduction to the blues, and I never looked back.
So I got a copy on DVD. People like to bootleg DVDs. I got a copy of Soundstage. I think the year was 77.
Mm-hmm.
My dad and BB, my dad did a set. Well, they filmed like maybe three or four tunes. BB had his set, and then my dad would later join BB on his set. Again, I guess this is at the height of the Together for the First Time or Together Again Live.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so cool just to see that, because I'd only seen like a small clip of it, you know, on YouTube, and someone gifted me like a DVD complete with a nice little case, nice little artwork. Of course, the nice little artwork was just a reprint of the Together for the First Time record. So yeah, there's that. And it's just so good. As a kid growing up and remembering seeing some of those guys as I, you know, was a kid, you know, like Joe Harden was there. He was my dad, ultimately my dad's final music director on trumpet, Melvin Jackson, right? Who else? My biggest source of inspiration, the guy that first put drumsticks in my hands, his name was Harold Portier. His nickname was Peeny. And Peeny was the guy that could play all the stuff that Jabbo did. He like basically could recreate it almost to a T, which is scary because, you know, you don't ever want to like, you know, carbon copy somebody, but like turn on your love light and don't cry no more. That's, you know, that's some difficult, you know, explicative to play.
Mm-hmm.
I will be 47 in November and I still on a good day can half ass everything that Uncle Jab, may he rest in peace, did. The whole, the bell on the ride cymbal and like the slight ghost note shuffle on the snare drum. Just, I looked at them one time at NAMM. This was in 2000 when we reconnected. And I said, you got to be ashamed of yourself. What you talking about, nephew? I said, man, you know can't nobody play that like you. Well, what you talking about? Peeny could play it. I'm not Peeny. Nephew, let me tell you something. You can't play how I play. I can't play how you play. You got to play how you play, and I play like I play, and that's going to be the end of that. And that, you know, that was his way of saying, take the pressure off yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Without saying, take the pressure off yourself. So, yeah, that's those are my guys.
You know, music is not a competition, or it shouldn't be. You know what I'm saying? It's like everybody.
There are quite a few people that need to hear that.
I know.
Repeat that and say it louder.
I listen, I had one of my guitar players in the band. We were jamming in Florida once, and he's going, I'm going to kill all these guys on stage. I'm going to rip them apart. And I'm like, that's the wrong attitude, dude. The old
cutting heads trick.
Yeah, we're here to enjoy each other's groove. We're not here to show off and say I'm the best. A jam is supposed to be a collaboration, not a
right
fight. Yeah. You know?
Now I will tell you this. Back in the day, I learned this as a kid in the mid '80s, until the present day when they when both bands, you know, pretty much came to their end. But there was more than friendly rivalry between both the Bobby Blue Bland Orchestra and the BB King Band. Like, it was just funny. Like, you know, all right, let's go to work. Whatever we did last night, you know, when they weren't like on the same bill as last night, tonight we got let's get it. But the absolute worst was always Albert King, because he would play before my dad before BB, and then the three of them would get together. And I'm sure you've heard Mr. Coleman make this impression, but Albert King would walk off stage. I would go out there just shit if I was y'all. I'd burn that stage up. It's a little too hot. So I might want to wait a minute. Right. And but see, that was like the friendly camaraderie, and just the iron sharpens iron. And so if Albert King's band comes out on stage and is smoking like that, you can't half ass it in the Bobby Blue Bland Band. Mm-hmm. And then if Blue's band was killing, you know, Blue gonna really get to, singing, you know, if you will, you know, he's gonna do the thing that he's known to do. All right. What follows suit? Now the King has got to come on with it. You know, you can't phone it in. Those three iconic titans wouldn't let the other rest on any type of laurel. Okay. So Albert was going to push Blue. Blue's going to push BB. And BB wanted to push them both off a cliff for making it work hard. But it was all out of love and mutual respect and admiration. And I think that's kind of like a lost art form in music. Now people, like you said, they just care about how many notes they can play. And, oh, I'm going to kill this cat with my five-string bass, or I'm like, man, I cannot wait to like dial this Marshall stack up to 10 with my Les Paul. And then, you know, there's some dude that's like, man, I'm going to kill them all with my Lars Ulrich double pedal crescendo, and they're not going to know what hit them. And all the while, the crowd's like, what the hell is this?
I hear you. I do. Hey, let me blow a little smoke at your dad, okay?
Yeah.
The first time I ever saw him was at that Westbury show, right? He was a little advanced years, okay?
Yeah.
But he came out, sang his opener, and I think song number two was kind of like a slow romantic jam. And in my entire life, I have never seen an audience react like that to a singer. Ever. Ever.
Yeah, Blue was crooning.
What was it about him to make the ladies go, ooh? Because they did.
I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. It's that intangible X factor that you just can't put your finger on it.
That's it.
But as he would always say, I sing to the ladies, for the ladies, about the ladies. And he said, fellas, if you listen, it might be able to help you later on tonight. You know, and that's just what he was. You know, he was, I've heard these old board recordings and a couple of bootlegs where he was introduced by his then band leader, MC Art Wilson, as the Reverend Dr. Bobby Blue Bland. And it's like, as soon as he would say that, you're like, you know, not trying to sound like an ass, but to the average person, what? The Reverend Doctor? What is that? Maybe 2-3 songs in, you got it. Because not only is he preaching something to you that you didn't know it, that you didn't know about, and then you didn't know that you needed to know, he is also, you know, administering some form of healing to you, some care, you know, or he could have like just verbally wrote you a prescription that you can't get filled at Walgreens, you know. But you know, if you stop being hard headed and listen to your woman and do right by or for, you know, she might fill that prescription for you. That's the best metaphor explanation I can give you as to why and how that man was the way he was on stage.
Well, I have a philosophy about both your dad and B.B. King in that I firmly believe with all my heart and soul, they never sang a lyric or sang a note they did not believe with all their heart. Like when B.B. King would say, "Who really loves you? Guess who? Guess who?" And he's pointing at the audience. He meant it.
Yeah.
He meant, and when your dad sang a song, like I'm off the top of my head, like I wouldn't treat a dog the way, you know, he meant that too.
Yeah.
You know, you can't fake emotion. And these guys didn't do it. They just came out and put their heart and soul on stage with every performance. And it's a standard, to be honest with you, I don't think anybody over top. And I mean that with all my heart and soul.
Yeah, I mean it is what it is, as the kids would say. There's you can't manufacture or fake true blues or true emotion in music, period. I'll segue to an extent. Look at Axl Rose in the early 90s during the Illusion era. And all the crap that seemed to follow him, that band cannot pull off or put on intense performances without an intense enigma or engine, you know, pulling that train, if you will, you know. Like you got Slash, Duff, Matt, Izzy, you know. And with Axl, it just, you can't fake that. There's a thing. You can even parlay that over to Zeppelin and the Stones and, you know, God bless, you know, Sir Charlie Watts.
Mm-hmm.
He held all that together. And I'm very proud of and happy that someone like my dear friend Steve Jordan got tapped to help the Stones carry on, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, and that's the same thing with the Foo Fighters. Taylor Hawkins, like, you know, wasn't the original drummer, but he was the drummer of the Foo Fighters, and now like the Phenom, Josh Fries. He's the guy that's helping to keep the Foos going. You know, it's something when you're able to be that component to help something that might have faltered or was slowing down, but regain its composure and get back on track. So, you know, much respect to both Steve Jordan and Josh Fries for like anchoring two iconic bands.
Yeah, it's a great point you just made right there. Let's talk a little wrestling. How's that sound? Because I think the fans...
It doesn't matter how it's... I'm sorry.
That's right. That's right. You know, I think the fans are going to be fascinated with how much you know about wrestling. Your reputation precedes you here. Tell me how you got into it. Well, first of all, you know what? When I played Beale Street for the concert I told you about with Coco Taylor in Memphis... I visited Jerry Lawler on the wrestling set the day before. Jerry and I were friends.
Wow. Okay, cool.
And I had appeared on his show in the 90s doing a little bit of an angle with a villainous wrestler called Leatherface. And we remained friends all those years later. And I came to Memphis. I said, "Can I?"
Oh my God! And say, yeah. Wait. I'm trying to think. Leatherface was not Sid Vicious. It was someone else.
Right. It was somebody else. It was tall, but it wasn't Sid.
Yeah.
But anyway, I came on the set in Channel 5, and I had a rare picture of Jerry Lawler and his old tag team. And here comes Leatherface, who saw the picture in half.
Oh,
just started the feud between them, you know. So it's like it's a cute little angle, you know. We got it over, so it was pretty cool. But tell me what you've watched. You obviously were a Memphis wrestling fan, I would assume.
Oh God, yeah. But real quick, before you shot the angle, did they make a copy of the photo, or is the original?
No, I screwed up. I screwed up.
Oh my God.
He saw it in half. And it was the only one we had at our office. Well, you know, I was the managing editor of PWI, Pro Wrestling Illustrated Magazine. That's how I got on.
Did not know that.
Yeah, that's how I got on that show. Yeah, this is why I do this show. Before my music career, I was with Pro Wrestling Illustrated for about 6.5 years. And I made a name for myself. And people, you know something? I moved on to different walks of life. I did the blues, I did other things. I'm doing something else now. But my wrestling years will not let me go. It's like every time I try to get out of it, somebody pulls me back into it all the time, dude. So you know what? After years of fighting it, I said, the heck with it. I'm just going to go with it. So I started this crazy little podcast in January, and it's doing great. So it's like, if people remember me for that, who am I to say not to say thank you? You know, because it's like, I'm amazed that the people remember me from the late 80s to early 90s. It was just about 6 or 7 years, but it refuses to let me go. And I think it's because I did a lot of TV, like I just explained to you. So to make a long story short, that's how I got on Memphis Wrestling, because I was a guest for Pro Wrestling Illustrated and was there to present Jerry Lawler with a deal. So anyway, that, and then I went on the Jerry Lawler show the next day. You used to have a Sunday morning show. You remember that? Yeah. I was on that show talking about Eric Embry. You know, it was like, it was fun. We had a blast, man.
Primetime Eric Embry. Wow.
That's right. Yeah.
So I just had to ask about the photo, mainly because I still to this day want to know about the angle that The Rock and Austin did, where Willie Nelson had a signed guitar that The Rock was playing for the Rock concert, and Austin put his foot in it. And like, I was like, they had to have had, you know, they had a silk screen Willie's signature and put on a different guitar. I know full well that, and so that's why I had to ask. But to answer your question originally, yes, lifelong wrestling. Well, since I was 7, 8 years old, my entry into pro wrestling was this. On the weekends, I used to like to go to my maternal grandmother's home and spend, you know, the weekend with her, like, you know, Friday night, Saturday, come home, maybe Sunday. Right. So I would have free reign of the TV, and, you know, she had cable, you know, we're talking the old school cable where you, there's like 37 or 38 channels on a little box and it go, you slide it back and forth. Right. So I'm watching all the cartoons on Saturday, the big bowl of cereal. I'm high on life, right? Living the high life. But I never, ever got to watch Fat Albert on Channel 3 of the CBS affiliate, because it was 10 a.m. and it's like instantaneously she would pop up. Grandson, I got to see what Lawler did. I'm like, and, you know, I'm a kid. I wasn't exposed to wrestling. I didn't know anything about it. So, like, I'm sitting there watching, you know, Lawler and Bill Dundee and Handsome Jimmy Valiant, the worst tag team ever, Rough and Ready.
Rough and Ready. That's right.
They, like, I think they've won two matches. I think they won two matches total. And so, you know, I kind of slightly got bit by the bug, and I knew that apparently when you've had all that you can handle, like Popeye would say, enough's enough, and I can't stand no more. you pull a strap down, and you know, it's on, right? So me and my cousins were, cousins always play fight, wrestle, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So around about 11 or 12, my older cousin introduced me to the USA Network and what was then known as the WWF.
Right.
And I did. And there they were, the British Bulldogs. Oh my God. These guys, so cool, acrobatic. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm thinking, oh, wow, he's got on like ninja. I'm like, stupid. Ninja socks with, you know, their shoes with the big toe and the split and the rest of the toes. I'm like, this guy looks super cool, man. He's got big muscles. And next thing I know, there he was from Venice Beach, California, weighing at 315 pounds. Hulk Hogan. I'm like, that did it. Him and Junkyard Dog were having a tag match. I think they were up against, might have been Bundy and Stud, and that was it. And like, you know, on the weekends I didn't spend with my grandmother, I was watching wrestling. Drove my mom nuts. She hates it to this day. But fast forward, I'll catch her watching Friday Night SmackDown, asking me, what does acknowledge me mean?
Really?
Like, who is Roman Reigns, you know? Oh. And so she popped when something Snoop Dogg was on TV, talking about his cousin, you know, Sasha. Who is his cousin? Sasha Banks.
Snoop Dogg had a cousin at wrestling?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
And so, you know.
So she's turned a corner, I guess. She likes it too now.
Yeah, and well, I'm not going to go that far, but, you know, she's 78, and she's known to, you know, watch a little Friday Night SmackDown. And, you know, I remember the most recent SmackDown that was here, I was there. And she goes, I saw you on TV. How did you get tickets to SmackDown? I said, do you see those guys, you know, the Usos? Yeah.
Yeah?
Okay, that one right there, uh-huh. Well, I know his father-in-law. His father-in-law is a guitar singer based in Florida, Derek Mack. And his daughter, we know her as Trinity.
Oh, but she's something else on TV.
Yeah, she's Naomi on TV, but her government name is Trinity. And
oh, so you got tickets from him?
Yes, ma'am. And Derek called me 2 days before Mania this year. Man, you want to go to Mania? I was like, is it Barrett in the Woods? Yeah. Man, I got ringside seats, but I can't go, man. I got this gig that's paying me way too much. I'm like, okay. Can't find a fight out that quick that will not like put me in a sharpshooter, and where am I going to stay? And I'd love to go, but I can't make it. So, and Raw's going to be here in a couple weeks. Matter of fact,
so you actually, you you attend every show you can, apparently, right?
I try my best. I've been fortunate enough to, I've seen the Nitros when they're at the Coliseum, even a Thunder or two. I've seen Raw and SmackDown when they were at the old Memphis Pyramid. Now they're at the FedEx Forum. I saw SummerSlam last year. I was invited to go with a promoter named Julius Lewis, who runs the Blues Is All Right tours every year. And I didn't know that Julius was a wrestling fan. And because we certainly didn't discuss it when we worked for him, we as my dad. And I was always known to have something wrestling wise on, whether it be a Sting Scorpion shirt or an NWO shirt or, you know, insert, you know, whatever rock shirt that I still had.
Mm-hmm.
And You know, I even had the Just Bring It track jacket he wore in 2011 when he's doing that. And so he asked me, "Do you want to go to SummerSlam?" Like, yeah. How much your tickets? Do you want to go to SummerSlam? That was code for shut the hell up. So I said, yeah, I want to go. So he had an RV and we drove up to, you know, Nissan Stadium, and he had a skybox. And like, I watched, you know, Mania from a skybox, not Mania, SummerSlam from the skybox, mm-hmm. and thoroughly enjoyed myself. And I remember, I DM'd Becky Lynch, like, "Hey, I'm like here. Any chance that I can get this gift bag to you that I've been?" And she's like, "We'll see what we can do." And I'm like, "You know, understand. No worries if not possible." The Becky Lynch thing is, I, you know, follow her on Instagram, and she had posted about being in Seattle, and she was at the studio where Pearl Jam cut 10. And I was like, commented like, "Hey, Dave Cruzan, meet Becky Lynch. Much like me, huge fan of Pearl Jam," and, you know, whatever, left it alone. And Dave responds back to her, and then I get a DM from her and a follow from her, and like, I'm like, holy crap, you know, Becky's following me and DMing me. And I'm like, you know, I just, you know, I'm a fan of Pearl Jam, she's a fan of Pearl Jam, like, hey, whatever. And so, you know, we've exchanged nice messages and whatnot. I was so freaked out when she, you know, got concussed.
Right.
That night, with the week of Survivor Series, when she was supposed to go one-on-one with, I think she was supposed to work with Rousey that night for Survivor Series in 18 or whatever. Mm-hmm. It turned out, you know, Charlotte, you know, had to take her spot, but she's like, "Yeah, I'm fine, but thanks for checking, blah, blah, blah." You know, I remember I saw Seth and their daughter walking down on Main Street. I said, "Are you here? I just saw them." "Yeah, they have to come everywhere with me wherever I go." It's like, "Sorry, I missed you, but next time." I'm like, "All right, cool." So yeah, huge mark for wrestling.
Wow.
And I read this story. I don't mean to cut you off. We're both fans of Dusty Rhodes, I presume. Yes.
Yeah.
And we all know the notorious Gary Hart. Yes.
Oh yeah.
Same promoter that took me to SummerSlam apparently discovered that in Gary Hart's book that Gary and Dusty were working on trying to do some kind of event. And I think this is in the early 70s. Gary wanted to bring my dad in to perform and have Dusty sing a couple songs with him. And Dusty was like, "I think I can handle it on my own. I don't need nobody else, baby." And I was like, what the hell? My dad and Dusty Rhodes could have met. And I find this out right after I meet Cody Rhodes. I met Cody when AEW worked in South Haven. This is in January 2020. You know, there's a photo of Cody rocking some Project Rock stuff. And, you know, I was, you know, man, I really am a fan. And, you know, just really tried to, like, be super cool and not be like, "Oh, my God, you and your brother and your dad." You know, and my business partner, Kenneth Wheat Robinson, has often said, "I see similarities between Cody Rhodes and you." I'm like, "How so?" I kind of had an idea of where he would go, but I wanted to see how close we would be in this assessment. Dusty is well known, but Dusty didn't get to enjoy all the accolades that a Ric Flair or Hulk Hogan got, right? There's some things that Dusty didn't get to do that those guys did, right? BB is a lot like Ric Flair. And my dad is a lot like Dusty Rhodes. Like, BB could even be Hogan, right?
Mm-hmm.
when you think, if you're a wrestling fan, when you think wrestling, you're going to think about Flair. You're going to think about Hogan. You should think about Dusty, but Dusty might kind of slip through your mind, if you will, no pun intended. If you think about Blues, you're going to think about, you got to think about BB. You're going to think about Muddy Waters. You're going to think about Albert King. You're going to think about all the guys that, quote unquote, are known in addition to also being having a guitar with them. My dad had a microphone with him. That was the microphone was his instrument. Well, his voice was his instrument.
You make a great point because that's what I did too. I just sang. So it's like, you're right. There aren't that many individual blues singers out there. When you really think about it, I mean, just the one person known for being a singer, it's a rarity, isn't it?
It's an anomaly. Male wise, yeah, I can only think really blues. I can only think of my dad. No disrespect to Johnny Taylor or Tyrone Davis, but they're more of a R&B.
R&B, yeah.
Right. But, you know, if you don't have a guitar or harmonica, they're going to just say they'll stick you in blues nonetheless. You know, but, you know, the women of the blues, you know, your Coco Taylors and your Ruth Browns and Katie Webster, Etta James, you know, these iconic women.
Shamika.
Had Shamika Copeland. Now, to me, I'd go so far, since we're talking wrestling, I'd say Shamika is the Charlotte Flair of the blues.
I can't argue with that. I hear you. I get it. Like, you know, always there, you know, always on top of
in the in the title picture, you know.
Right, always. If she's not the champion, sharp. She's the number one contender. Absolutely.
Exactly my point. And now I guess when I conclude this conversation, I'm going to spend some time and like think about like some of the guys that are in guys and girls, men and women, excuse me, that are in blues. Like if they were to be a wrestler, who would they be? Like, you know, part of me wants to think that Jimmy Vaughn. Part of me wants to say Jimmy something like like an Arn Anderson.
Yeah, the rock solid, not flashy guy. Right, right.
And also enduring.
Right. That's really a good one. That's a great one. Yeah.
Okay, here's one more, and then we'll get back on topic. Kenny Wayne Shepherd. Chris Jericho.
I was thinking Shawn Michaels, but I get it. That type.
I don't put the Shawn on him because Shawn has stepped away twice.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Okay. Jericho has gone through so. Jericho has adapted with the times. And so has Kenny Wayne Shepherd.
Right.
Remember the big blues explosion in 96? Kenny and Jake Andrews and Johnny Lang and those were the top three at the time. He's still going.
Right. Right. Nothing stopped him.
Shows no signs of slowing down.
No. Even did that project with Stephen Stills a few years ago.
Yeah. And so look at Chris Jericho. There you go. And just by default, because of what I said earlier, yeah, I'd like to fashion myself after Cody. I'd like to fashion myself after Cody, but I'm such a mark that I'm probably gonna keep it closer to the Samoan dynasty. So someone like Roman or The Rock. I'm kidding. Yeah, Cody all the way.
Yeah, well, you got the shirt on, so, you know,
No, I'm feeling oozy. I am feeling oozy.
There it is. I wish you folks could see it.
On the spine Wednesday night.
Now, I got a question for you. You hit that sweet spot as a wrestling person between old school and what's going on today.
Yes.
How do you feel about today's stuff versus the old stuff? Is one better or is one worse? Or do you think it's just modern times calls for a different kind of show like they have now?
I'm going to steal a lyric from Pearl Jam. It's evolution, baby. do the evolution. Everything, what worked in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, we had less distractions. I get distracted to this day watching the product because I have a smartphone nearby. I have an iPad nearby, a computer. I'm watching this stuff via an iPad connected to a TV. Right. It's not, we don't have destination programming like we used to. Like, you know, Saturday night's main event, you parked your tuchus in front of that TV by 10:25 to catch the last 5 minutes of your local news here in Memphis. And then, you know, you did the most beautiful sound to me ever. Tonight, Saturday Night Live is being preempted by Saturday Night's main event. Like, right. Woo! Right? Because it was like one Saturday a month. But watching the Steiners versus the Road Warriors for the first time,
mm-hmm.
I thought, wow. But one of my all-time, I can watch it to this day. Again, it's the Steiners, but right. From Super Brawl 91, the Steiners versus Sting and Luger. That's the first time he had four faces against one another. Mm-hmm. And that match was so awesome. And I remember, like, you know, flashing back to that time in 91, I was like, yes, Sting and Luger are finally going to become tag team champions. You know, Luger's going to have the U.S. title and the tag team title with his best friend Sting. I don't know, you know, I'm not smartened up as to why things happen the way they happen or don't happen. I don't know anything. I'm green. Wink, wink. And I was so pissed off at Nikita Koloff for, like, interrupting that match and blah, blah, blah. But all that did, you know, the Steiners got the tag team titles. Mm-hmm. Luger was transitioning. I did have a feeling that Luger was next up to be champ because Sting was a world champ the year before. So you had to get the Flair and Tatsumi Fujinami thing straightened out. And then Luger was just going to ascend, right? It was 91 was Luger's time, which ultimately, you know, it happened. Just right. Not the way we all thought it would have.
Mm-hmm.
So
hey, that's my sweet spot, man. That's when I was working at the magazines in that period, right? Right, what you're talking about.
I used to buy, my mom hated it, but whenever I had like an extra $5 or $10, sometimes 15, it was three new magazines, and I used to do the drawing and stuff, and
mm-hmm.
you know that was my huge mark. So you fast forward like the Attitude Era stuff. It's great. You know, obviously you had to tone all that down as time went on because, you know, you had the guys that were trying to work, you know, when they could barely function. But if you I love the Shawn Michaels Shelton Benjamin match from Raw where Shelton easily broke his jaw taking that super kick from Sean. He springboarded like Brian Pillman used to with the clothesline, but and just ate every bit of Sean's right foot. And it was like, wow, sudden impact. Okay. The matches Edge and John Cena had. Because by this time, I'm a little bit more educated and I kind of get the storytelling aspect. My favorite Austin Rock match was the finale. And It was so much drama. I told a girl recently, I don't do drama in my life, but damn it, I will do drama and wrestling. You know,
can't avoid it these days.
Yeah, but like, you know, just
big part of it.
And the way that, you know, the match ended, that it took three rock bottoms, and the way that he hit the second and then ultimately the third rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, breaking character or the fourth wall, sitting up in the ring talking to Austin, had no clue what was going on then, right? I mean, I kind of got the feeling, you know, he's telling Austin something that only he needs Austin to hear. And then, you know, when you watch the WrestleMania 20 rewind thing, and they're working on 19, talking about 19, you get it. Like, Austin, his last act of service, I'm going to do this. You know, Rocky put me over when I needed him to in the previous Manias. You know, it was one of those things where it was just great to see, but you didn't know what was going on. And, like, you know, even to this day, like, I'll, you know, if I were to watch that again, I'd get, you know, a little emotional knowing that I know that you'll never see those two guys do that the way they did.
True.
The match, the first match The Rock and Cena had in Florida, I felt that one. Second one, not so much, because I knew what was going to happen. Of course, I was praying for a swerve. Just, you know, let's face it, Rock had the best Mania track record, win-loss. The one that I've spoken so much about WWE, let's go back to WCW. I don't know what the deal was between, for the count, for Sting and Hogan at Starrcade. But when Sting, you know, when Brett rang the bell, had the bell rang for to signal that Sting won, and the way Sting stood up and, like, brushed his hair back, and the way he jumped into, I think it was the Giant's arms, and just, like, the look on his face. I'm 46 and a half years old. I still catch a slight tear because, like, I was invested when I watched that match at my buddy's apartment, reliving all of fall of 96 to winter of 97. Like, that was, like, the best setup. He never spoke a word and didn't speak a word until, like, January of 98, when he pointed a bat at Hogan and said, J.J. Dillon said, "You got no guts," and looked at Hogan and said, "And you're a dead man." And then he turned and walked out of the little press conference. I'm like, this is great storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, that's my thing.
Man, you're making me fall on the floor, dude. You're no ordinary civilian. I'm telling you, you're coming on a wrestling show, and you have an encyclopedic memory for these big matches. It's amazing. Astounding.
Okay, as a kid, I'll give you another one that messed me up. When Barry Windham turned on Luger to join the Horsemen, and then you fast forward to it's Dusty and Barry at the Great American Bash. I thought as a kid that Barry was Dusty's kid, but then, like, you know, I knew, yeah, it's the equivalent to, like, me being considered one of BB's kids, if you will, right?
Right.
So it's like when Barry put Dusty down after Ronnie Garvin knocked him out, after just helping his brother, gorgeous Jimmy Garvin, rescue Precious in that god-awful Tower of Doom match that they resurrected like two more times. It's like, what? No. But I thought, and I will stand by the statement to the day I die, Barry Windham was the perfect fourth horseman.
You can't argue with that. I agree with that.
Flair.
In my eyes, he was the last horseman.
Yeah, Flair, Arn, Tully, Windham, JJ.
Mm-hmm.
That's my four horsemen.
Yes, it's everybody's four horsemen. Yeah.
Like, you know, I think Luger was brought in as to get him ready to become a face. Looking back on it now.
Right.
I dug the fact that when they tried to revive the horsemen in 89, I know that the story is Sting's involvement with the horsemen does not count. He was never an official member. But if we could have had Flair, Arn, Tully, Ole as the J.J. Dillon as the manager, which he was doing.
Right.
And Barry Windham was coming. Barry Windham made it back spring of 90 after that failed Widowmaker run, right? And you would have thought Barry leaving the way he did in 89 that, you know, he'd have some momentum. The Widowmaker thing, I like the prefix, but, you know, Barry Windham is a known guy. Yeah, you did not make him, but he's a known guy, Vince.
Well, Vince had this magic touch of botching character changes left, right, and sideways. You know, Red Roosters. You know, how many great wrestlers did he blow it with?
Terry Taylor was. I remember watching Terry Taylor in the EWF, visiting my grandma, my dad's mom. In a nursing home. That's how I discovered UWF.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I discovered Hacksaw Jim Duggan before he became Hacksaw Jim Duggan, you know, with a 2x4 and nothing but blue on blue.
Right.
On blue. That's how I discovered Eddie Gilbert, Sting, Rick Steiner, Missy Hyatt. I kind of knew Dark Journey a little bit from WCCW.
Right.
But Terry Taylor, Ron Simmons.
What was that exactly?
The first man of color to truly be world champion.
Mm-hmm.
And you put like a blue Nerf helmet on him.
Yeah, exactly right.
And you got him walking around with like
Farouk.
Yeah. And so I'm just glad that, you know. Hey, but as Ron would say. Hey man, they gave me something, and you know what? I made it work for me. I made that work for me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And hey, yeah, love Ron Simmons. I remember watching Ron when he was like, you know, before he started wearing long tights. You know, again, when the UWF was being absolved into NWA. You know, he came in, you know, 88 on TBS. It was great stuff.
You know, I thought Ron Simmons was going to be the next Bruno Sammartino in terms of he'd hold the title for 6 to 8 years. I was serious.
That would have been great.
I honestly thought that he had the masculine charisma of a Bruno Sammartino. You know what I'm saying? The type of stellar athlete, stellar background, stellar personality, stellar intellect. Just one of those guys born to do what he was doing. And I was shocked when they took the belt off him so fast. But then again, that was Jim Herd and all those other, oh God, I didn't want to talk about it, you know?
Yeah. I've heard less than stellar glowing words about Mr. Herd, cause he is older than me, from our beloved illustrious 16-time world champion of the Nation, Warwick Flair. Right. I'll say this. If Ron Simmons could have had the ultimate mouthpiece, if Ron Simmons could have had our modern day Paul Heyman, not Paulie Dangerously,
but Paul Heyman, that's just the difference. You're right.
Yeah, Paulie Dangerously was the psycho yuppie from New York. Paul Heyman is a well-versed, articulate, well-spoken genius. He's an advocate one moment. Now he's a wise man. If guys like your Ron Simmons, if we could have had someone paired with him, I would dare say you're right. Ron could have held the title. He could have been the first. He could have been our, black people, our Bruno Sammartino.
Yeah.
Because I thought as a kid growing up, it was highway robbery that the Junkyard Dog never held a title that I knew of. You know, not a major title. I know he, and I've got the old Mid-South DVD. But even Butch Reed held some Mid-Atlantic titles. And the fact that for as much crap as Bill Watts gets for his politics and his beliefs, he sure did do a lot for black wrestlers.
There's no question about it. Well, you know, I agree with your statements about Bill Watts, but he also knew who his audience was.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't neglect a large segment of the viewing public who was watching his federations at that point.
So all he did was, you know, all he did was do what was best for business.
Oh, I've heard that before.
Right?
Right, right.
So quick story, segue, I'll make this really brief.
Okay.
In 2009, which was the last time that BB played the club, he played on Monday and Tuesday. Tuesday, the WWE were filming SmackDown at the FedEx Forum. I went to that SmackDown. I took my then girlfriend and her two kids, and we walked by the BB King Club. I was getting them home. I took them home, and I had to get to my gig in Midtown. I learned the next day that Vince, Hunter, Steph, and I think I can't remember who else, they went to watch BB play after SmackDown ended. And as legend would have it, Vince paid everyone's tab. Now, when I say everyone, we're talking everyone that was in attendance to watch BB. Vince picked up the tab.
Incredible.
So I learned the next day, and my mom calls me, and she's like, "Why come you didn't come say hi to BB? He was asking about you." I said, "Well, Mom, I told you I took, Crystal and the kids to go see SmackDown, and I had a gig."
"Oh, yeah, I met the wrestler, man."
Because my mom didn't know anything about wrestling, right? And so when she says the wrestler, man, I'm thinking, oh, she met Jerry Lawler.
"Yeah, I met him and his daughter."
I said, "Whoa, you met Vince?"
"Yeah, Vince and his daughter."
"You met Stephanie, the billion-dollar princess?"
"Uh-huh." It's like,
I said, "Okay, that's cool." I hung up the phone. I was ranting and raving and cussing like I called myself all different kind of MFs, and I was like, I could have met Vince and Stephanie and pitched a couple ideas, because I had an idea for a character, right? Not a wrestler, but like I was going to be a hybrid of me. Who I am, yeah, a guy that kind of works out. I got a little bit of a body. And Slick, the doctor of style, Slick.
Right.
Like a guy that talks a lot of trash, but I wouldn't be a chicken crap heel, you know? I wouldn't mind taking my lumps or the bumps, right? Right. And I had a name and everything. RB Smooth, because, you know, they don't they weren't exactly big on using your real name, but you know, RB Smith, I was ready. That was my thing. To send me down to get trained or whatever, but that's what I wanted to do. And so as fate would have it, I did not get to meet Vince and Hunter and Steph. But I have had my fair share of meetings and meetings of a lot of the guys and girls with the WWE. You know, I've met Miz, Dolph, Ziggler, Mojo a couple times, Finn Balor in the gym. I met Becky before we became Instagram buddies.
Right.
Charlotte as well. Same night, actually, we had to take separate photos because they were in the feud. Bailey and Samoa Joe, Emma, you know, met a lot of people. I got a great photo of me with Nia Jax, Paige, and Alexa Bliss at Blue City Cafe.
You're blowing my mind, man. I never dreamed you were this much of a fan. I mean, I knew you were a fan, but you are.
I warned you. I'm a mark.
You're in it, Jack. I mean, I'm pleasantly surprised. I think this is really awesome. Great.
Thank you.
Now, hype yourself, will you? How can people get a hold of you in social media, where you're playing, what you got going on? Give yourself a commercial.
I'm an easy guy to find. We have a website. RodBland.com, RODDBLAND.com. I am on Instagram at the Rod Bland, RODDBLAND. Also, the project, Rod Bland, the members only band, RB and the MOB. You can find us on Facebook under that name, RB and the MOB. Instagram, YouTube, at Rod Bland, at RB and the MOB. We are everywhere.
And you're very busy playing live in Memphis, aren't you?
Yeah, I have Thursday, tomorrow night, the BB King Blues Club, Ashton Riker and the Memphis Royals. On second thought, I think I'm going to be off this weekend after Thursday. But usually one Sunday a month at Lafayette's Music Room, Sunday Funday. I post my calendar at rodbland.com.
Nice website, by the way. Really slick website. That's really well designed, and it's easy to navigate, which I appreciate, you know. So that's pretty cool.
And again, there's also rbandmob.com. That's centrally about the project, and we're working on editing some content. We recently played Antones in Austin, Texas, which was a great venue for both my dad and BB. And as part of their 48th anniversary of the club being open, and Susan Antone was there. Gary Clark Jr.'s parents were there. That meant a lot to me that they were there. Mm-hmm. And we ran through a review of a lot of my dad's songs, as played by us, you know, sang by Chris Stevenson on keys and Ashton Riker as well. You know, there was one guy that kept yelling out the third song in, "Ain't No Love in the Heart of the City." It's like, okay. And then another guy yelled out like, "Members Only," and said, "Okay. We'll do that. And it's your time to sing. You sing with us?" "Yeah. Okay. All right. When it's your turn, you sing with us, but from wherever you're sitting right now." And then, we did, another guy yelled out 36, 38. I was like, "Whoa, she wasn't that big." It was 36, 22, 36.
Oh,
so,
man.
You know, and of course, you know, I managed to, yeah, share some stories about my father and speak about him from a son's perspective, because that's what Rod Bland and the Members Only Band is about. It's a tribute show to him, and making sure that my mantra is well in place. Honor thy father.
Well, you're doing a great job of it. Great, and you know what? You got the award to prove it.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying, right?
I got Living Blues Magazine in 22 also named me Musician of the Year for drums, and I'm currently nominated for Percussionist of the Year with Blues Blast Magazine. So we've still got a little bit of traction from the EP.
Hey,
so
I didn't say you're a contemporary blues star without looking it up, you know. You know that. You know what I'm saying? I can't come out and say something like that unless it's true. My listeners will, you know, have a field day with that. So no, I gotta come correct. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And I appreciate you being here, man. It's great meeting you finally.
Yeah.
We'll talk again. I think we should talk again and
we need to get your
perspectives on stuff.
We need to discuss SummerSlam. I saw some of your Facebook posts, and I got some thoughts as well. So we definitely need to
meet me over there first, and we'll yell at each other or something like that.
I definitely need to get back acclimated to AEW as well.
Yeah,
so we can discuss all the things.
Right. Well, anyway, what a conversation! What a musician! What a fan!
Thank you.
Rod Bland, everybody, you can't listen. The album, again, I hype this. It's with the Members Only Band, live on Beale Street, a tribute to Bobby Blue Bland. It is a modern blues classic. Check it out. I'm sure you can hear it wherever records are available. And I'm telling you what, it's been an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you. Also available on all of your digital streaming platforms, Apple Music, Google Tidal, whatever you stream from. We're there.
Yep. And you know what? I still think the best is yet to come. You got a lot up your sleeve. I can smell it. You know what I'm saying?
There's more to come. Rod is cooking.
There it is. Rod Bland, everybody. Thanks again, man.
Thank you, Bob.
I'm so crazy excited that I just recorded a finish for the show and I'm scrapping it because I left half the stuff I needed to put into it out of it. Oh, baby. Oh. In any event, I may be a little loopy right now, but it's only because I'm excited. You know, it was an exciting time to interview a star like that. And just a great musician, great guy. Rod Bland, everybody. Just so excited about this particular show. I don't know how this was going to do amongst the wrestling intelligentsia out there, but you know what? This one's for me. You know, this is for me. I've been meaning to talk to this gentleman for a long time, and I had a great time, and I hope you had a fun time listening to it. And the reason I'm re-recording it is I forgot another musician, Brian Teo, who plays our intro and outro theme called Hold On a Sec. And I wanted to make sure I got a plug in for him on today's show. So there you go, Brian. I don't want to skip you. Contact us, won't you? We have a lot of stuff coming in. We're getting real special shows every week for you. Facebook, I'm Bob Smith. And on the lead page, you can see me singing with B.B. King. You see, I can't get away from it. You know, same way I can't get away from wrestling. The wrestling and the blues, that's me. A little comedy mixed in, but you know. Our website, where you can find out everything you need to know about the outdated Wrestling Hour fan club. For a nominal fee, you can help support the show and hopefully join us for tea, don't you know? Not the kind that's made so barbarically. We prefer Red Rose tea, don't you know? Red Rose. Swinging Red Rose tea. Anyway, it's outdatedwrestlinghour.buzzsprout.com. All the shows are listed there, and you may choose whichever one you'd like to listen to without the use of an app. Of course, we're also available everywhere your podcast can be heard, so don't forget that either. But I'm finding a lot of my older fans, my older friends, just like the website. So, it's outdatedwrestlinghour.buzzsprout.com. Email outdatedwrestling@gmail. Write to us. Any questions you may have. I just got a really nice couple of letters. I'm going to talk about those next week, I think. I want to thank the people who wrote.
I used to list a couple of the other social media platforms. I'm not going to do those anymore. I'm just going to say Facebook and Gmail. I think that's good enough. Why confuse people? Why give you a laundry list of stuff to remember? Just Facebook, Bob Smith on Facebook, outdated wrestling at Gmail. Just like that. Anyway, I want to thank you for enjoying, hopefully, this very long show tonight. And we've got a lot of good stuff coming up for you in the future weeks. Hang with us. I'm having a blast. I hope you are too. And I want to thank everybody for listening. Our numbers of late have been, I can't ask for more. You know, I don't look at the ratings a whole lot, but this past couple of shows have been doing quite well, and I couldn't ask for more. I really couldn't. Considering I'm pretty much working this project by myself. In the beginning, I was thinking about getting a co-host, but I don't even want to hear the word co-host anymore. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, this is Bob Smith asking you to do what I ask you to do every week now. Take care of yourself, will you?